Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
We begin with a health-related story on neglected tropical diseases. These diseases affect more than 1 billion people around the world. Traditionally, the diseases have not received much funding, but experts say that is changing. Christopher Cruz has the story.
The diseases afflict more than 1 billion people around the world, but the media give little attention to them. They are neglected tropical diseases, or NTDs. The World Health Organization has identified 17 of them, including rabies, leprosy, river blindness, dengue, and chikungunya. About 535,000 people a year die from them, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They strike the poorest people in tropical and subtropical areas, often with inadequate sanitation. They cost developing economies billions of dollars every year, according to the WHO. Dr. Neeraj Mistry is the managing director of the Global Network for Neglected Tropical Diseases at the Sabin Vaccine Institute in Washington. He says more than 1 billion people affected by neglected tropical diseases don't have anyone lobbying for them. They don't have any voice. He says issues with the loudest voice get the most attention. That's the way policy is made. But experts say that is changing because of Zika. People can catch the Zika virus after being bitten by an infected Aedes mosquito. This is the same mosquito that can spread dengue, chikungunya, and yellow fever. Zika was first identified in 1947. The virus was largely ignored until the recent outbreak in Brazil. The WHO declared it a global health emergency and warned that Zika could infect as many as 4 million people in the Americas this year. Andy Wright is vice president of global health programs at the drug company GSK. He said, "Any situation like the current one with Zika puts a spotlight on emerging or relatively unknown diseases that have not attracted sufficient attention or investment. There's a global vulnerability to these diseases," said Dr. Mistry. "It's not just a function of poor countries." Because of global air travel, people can go around the world in 24 hours. They may contract a disease in a country in the developing world, not show any symptoms, then fly to the developed world and transmit it to people there. Ebola is an example. Dr. John Andrus is the director of vaccine advocacy and education at the Sabin Institute. He said diseases that only affected tropical areas before can now spread to other parts of the world. Infection, he said, is only a plane ride away. climate change also creates environments for the transmission of diseases by mosquitoes and black flies, according to Dr. Andrus. Crowded urban slums and plastic litter on the ground can also serve as breeding sites for mosquitoes. 2 years ago, there were outbreaks of dengue in the American states of Florida and Texas. In 2012, the U.S., the United Kingdom, the United Arab Emirates, 13 drug companies, and several global health foundations signed a London Declaration on NTDs. The declaration was to support the WHO's initiative to control or eliminate 10 diseases by the year 2020. The campaign promised almost $800 million for drug donation programs. As part of the London Declaration, the drug companies would share information to speed up the development of new treatments. And they agreed to supply billions of doses of drugs every year to help the world's poorest people. Dr. Mistry said these programs reached 800 million people in 2014. He hopes they will be made available to more than a billion people by 2020. He said, "It's an art to be the broker and diplomat and win trust and support from sectors with very different issues, such as NGOs, corporations, and foundations." He says the key was to find common goals. Government, he says, can serve as an effective broker. Experts called for greater focus on prevention to avoid the next global epidemic. Dr. Andrus says, "What's frustrating for me is that we're not more proactive in prevention of these outbreaks. It's not just the vaccine. It's good public health practice and surveillance. We need better diagnostic tests to detect these outbreaks earlier. It's important to control the carriers of these diseases." He advocates the use of insecticides, mosquito nets, and long-sleeved clothing as ways to fight mosquito-borne illnesses like Zika and dengue. Dr. Mistry says the attention on Zika will cause an increase in public-private partnerships to combat NTDs. It's the only way we'll find solutions to these problems. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
You are listening to As It Is.
On Saturday, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton defeated Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in the Nevada Democratic caucuses. Political experts say the clear win in Nevada was a big relief for Clinton and her supporters. They say Sanders must prove he can win more than the youth vote and in states more diverse than New Hampshire. Sanders said he believes that when Democrats hold their convention in Philadelphia in July, voters will see one of the great political upsets in the history of the United States. Also on Saturday, Donald Trump won the Republican primary in South Carolina. Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz tied for second. Trump's victory in the New Hampshire primary last week and his win Saturday strengthen his place as Republican frontrunner. Trump repeated parts of his campaign speech, saying the United States will start winning again if he becomes president. He said he will make Mexico pay for a wall along the U.S. southern border. He said he will challenge China on its trade surplus. Nevada holds its Republican primary on February 23rd. Many states will hold primaries on March 1st, a day known as Super Tuesday. Super Tuesday usually shows who will likely win the party nomination and compete for President of the United States. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush told a crowd in South Carolina that he was ending his campaign for the presidency. At the beginning of the presidential race, many believed Bush would be the Republican nominee. Recently, we received our supply of VOA wall calendars for 2016. To get your calendar, simply send an email to us at learningenglish@voanews.com or write to VOA Learning English, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Be sure to include your mailing address when you write. We have a limited number of calendars left, and when they are gone, they are gone. So write to us today. Next, Chinese state media say work crews in Tibet are turning the Lhasa River into a series of artificial lakes. Ann Ball has the report.
The Chinese government's Lhasa River project aims to build 6 dams along a 20-kilometer-long stretch of the river. Media reports say the man-made lakes are designed to help the travel industry improve water quality and prevent sandstorms. The project is aimed at creating what Chinese officials are calling a green environment. But some critics disagree. Fen Xiao is a Chinese geologist with the Sichuan Geological Society. He told VOA's Tibetan service that dams can slow down the river flow and damage the water quality. He calls the dams problematic, explaining that they will lead to sedimentation, which damages water quality. He also said the water environment capacity, the amount of water kept in each lake, will decrease and be more easily polluted. He added that flowing water is much better than still water. Also known as Kichu, the Lhasa River provides irrigation and drinking water for Tibetan farmers in 9 counties. Work on 2 major hydropower dams has already affected many farmers. The dams are being built northeast of the city of Lhasa in Lundup and Meidogungkar counties. The 2 have an estimated cost of over $1 billion, according to the China-Tibet News Service. Geologist Fen Xiao also says Chinese officials are ignoring the serious risk of the Lhasa River project causing earthquakes. Some leading engineers and geologists have linked the 7.9 magnitude Sichuan quake of 2008 with work on China's huge Three Gorges Dam. According to the China Daily, the Lhasa River Project's first working dam, named Dam No. 3, has already widened the river more than 300 meters. It has also created a water storage capacity of 1.5 million cubic meters. If all six dams are of about the same size, they could hold about 9 million cubic meters of water in Lhasa Valley when finished. Environmentalists are concerned about how the remaining construction work will impact salmon migration. Environmentalists are concerned about how the remaining construction work will impact salmon migration. A China Daily article quoted someone described as Dam No. 3's project manager. It said the official promised that the project would not harm the movement of fish. The dam gate will open for the fish to propagate in due time. Therefore, it won't pose a threat to the ecology of river downstream, the project manager said. I'm Ann Ball.
As researchers find more bacteria and viruses that resist germ-fighting drugs, the medical world is turning to old cures to fight disease. One cure is as simple as dirt. Ana Mateo has more.
Ancient people knew that some kinds of clay have healing qualities. They rubbed clay on their skin to cover wounds. They also used the natural rock or soil material to treat stomach problems. Now, American researchers have discovered how different clays work as medicine. They are researching the effectiveness of clays against antibiotic-resistant infections. Blue and green clays are found in volcanic areas of the world. Around volcanoes, native peoples used the clays to improve their health. It seems they knew what they were doing. Linda Williams is a clay and mineral scientist. She works at Arizona State University's School of Earth and Space Exploration in Tempe. She and her research team have been studying the Aboriginal people of Australia.
There's evidence of Aboriginals using clays for treating wounds, and they eat it. Many cultures eat clays to settle their stomach.
Williams and her team found the clay was effective against some pathogens. Pathogens are bacteria and viruses that cause disease. They examined bacteria that have developed resistance to other antibiotics. In laboratory tests, they saw how a blue-colored clay is effective against the drug-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, also known as MRSA. MRSA is a dangerous and sometimes deadly skin infection. The clay was also effective in treating Buruli ulcer, a skin disease found in the Ivory Coast. Here is how the blue clay works. Iron is one of the chemicals found in the clay. The bacteria need the iron to survive. Some of these same clays also contain aluminum. The minerals work together. Linda Williams says aluminum lets iron flood into harmful bacteria. The iron oxidizes and then kills the bacteria.
In the end, what we found is that aluminum, it is attacking the proteins in the cell wall of the bacterium and allowing pores to open so that iron, reduced iron too, goes into the interior of the bacterium has reactions with the proteins inside, it becomes oxidized and it destroys the biomolecules inside the cell, killing the bacterium.
Williams says she hopes the study will interest drug companies that want to explore the healing properties of blue and green clays. The National Science Foundation provided financial support for the study. Williams and her colleagues reported their findings in the journal Nature Scientific Reports. I'm Ana Mateo.
A bucket list is a list of things you want to do before you die. The term bucket list comes from an old English expression, kick the bucket. This idiom is a lighthearted way of talking about death. The Bucket List is the title of a 2007 movie starring actors Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman. It tells the story of two aging men who want to have some crazy adventures before they die. Visiting the Inca ruins at Machu Picchu should be high on anyone's bucket list. Buried deep in the Peruvian Andes, Machu Picchu is an icon or symbol of Inca civilization. Far away, tropical, and mysterious, it is the ultimate exotic travel destination. For many, a trip to Machu Picchu starts in Lima, the capital of Peru. Most tourists skip this dry coastal city of 10 million, but it is worth seeing for a few days. It is a foodie paradise with world-class restaurants. Lima's historic center is lively and easy to walk. A highlight is the 17th century monastery of San Francisco, with its famous library and catacombs. Before Lima's cemetery opened in 1808, the bodies of the dead were left in a space under the church. Visitors can see the catacombs where the bones of 25,000 people lie. To the south of the historic center is Miraflores, a modern seaside district. Larcomar is a shopping center built into the side of a cliff. Here is a great place to try Peru's famous seafood dish called ceviche, which is fish cooked in vinegar or citrus juice. Then, watch the sunset over the Pacific Ocean. After a few days in Lima, it is time to fly deep into the Peruvian Andes to the city of Cusco. This historic city of 300,000 was once the capital of the Inca Empire. At 3,400 meters, Cusco is one of the highest cities in the world. Visitors usually suffer from altitude sickness. A simple task like climbing a flight of stairs can leave you out of breath. The local people recommend chewing coca leaves to help fight altitude sickness. Leave your map behind and wander Cusco's narrow cobblestone streets. There are enough galleries, museums, churches, and archaeological sites to keep you busy for several days. From Cusco, you can take a 5-day hike on the Inca Trail to Machu Picchu. Most people, however, use a combination of train and bus to reach Machu Picchu. About 2 hours northwest of Cusco is the small Inca village of Ollantaytambo. This historic stone village is home to about 700 people. ancient Inca fortifications look down on the village from steep, treeless mountains. It was here where the Inca leader Manco fought the Spanish conquerors in the 16th century. The train ride to the base of Machu Picchu is one of the most scenic in the world. The train winds alongside a muddy, roaring river. As the train descends into the tropical forest, the weather turns hot and humid. Machu Picchu is actually 450 meters below Cusco. It is noticeably easier to breathe. From the final train stop at Aguas Calientes, visitors can hike or ride a bus up to Machu Picchu. Machu Picchu is one of the great man-made wonders in the world. It was built around 1450 for the Inca Emperor Pachacuti. A complex network of stone terraces lined the steep mountainside. The terraces were used for agriculture. Temples made of stones weighing up to 20 tons are perfectly joined without the use of mortar. The complex was built with special attention to the position of the sun and the moon. Amazingly, the Incas built Machu Picchu without the use of wheels or horses. The Incas left the site a few years after the arrival of the Spanish conquerors in the 1500s. The Spanish robbed and destroyed numerous native holy sites throughout Peru. Fortunately, they never found Machu Picchu. For 461 years, Machu Picchu was unknown to Western civilization. In 1911, American historian Hiram Bingham was traveling through Peru. A local farmer led Bingham to the ruins of Machu Picchu, which means Old Peak in the local Quechua language. Bingham wrote a popular book that introduced Machu Picchu to the Western world. He thought he had found the lost city of the Incas. But most experts today think the site was a citadel and a summer vacation home for Inca emperors. Exactly how and why Machu Picchu was built remains a mystery. Today, Machu Picchu is the top tourist attraction in Peru. It is so popular that the Peruvian government has limited access to the site to 2,500 visitors per day. It can take several days to get to Machu Picchu, but visitors can only stay for a few hours. For many tourists, Machu Picchu is more of a journey than a destination, and the memories of the short visit can last a lifetime. Maria Cecilia Lapuente is an education administrator in Cusco. She remembers visiting Machu Picchu for the first time as a teenager.
You feel different, you know, in a different way. It's like when you are on the top, you can feel that you are the owner of the world. Going climbing and finally it's like a ride to the top is like fantastic.
Machu Picchu is just one of Peru's many wonders. Peruvians take great pride in their nation's rich cultural heritage and natural beauty. Machu Picchu might be the most famous place in Peru, but it is only the beginning. And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
Thank you.